RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are talking to the wonderful duo from the Fit RV, James and Steph Adanero. The healthiest RV couple in the world recently took a break from filming YouTube videos and headed to Germany on an epic adventure.
We'll talk about planning for a European campervan vacation and the highlights of their trip. Plus, we get to hear all about their visit to the Truma headquarters and what it's like to camp across the pond.
You might think you're limited to exploring the North American region if you want to travel by RV, but we know RVing through Europe should probably be on your adventure bucket list. You are listening to episode number 164, The Fit RV, Campervans Through Europe.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, the Fit RV Campervans Through Europe, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is all about the future of the National Park Reservation System.
I know, right? So this recently, a couple weeks ago, there was a New York Times article on September 27, 2017, and I will, of course, link to it in the blog post for this specific podcast episode. And the article was called National Parks Struggle with a Mounting Crisis. Too many visitors. Oops.
Yeah, I mean, they've been promoting, like with that 100th anniversary last year, they've been doing so much promotion of the national parks. And I'm a big believer in trying to get everybody to enjoy the beauty of the national parks. They were created for all of us to enjoy. But that does come with problems, particularly some of the most visited NPS sites.
Yeah. So with all the focus on doing what the national park set out to do, right, the whole thing has always been this sort of democratic process of bringing Americans into the parks, right, and bringing that sort of experience to everyone in the country. Well, now, honestly, more people than ever are experiencing it, and it is causing some trouble. So, for example, right, in 2016, there were 331 million visits. 2017 is expected to exceed that, right? So over 40 million people visited national parks in August alone. So in 1 month, 40 million visitors.
And we saw those crowds. We just got back from Acadia National Park, and we headed into the park on Friday. It wasn't too bad. But when we headed into Acadia on Saturday, it was bonkers. It was zany.
That's supposed to be the quiet time in Acadia because it's towards the very end of the season. And honestly, people always say, oh, if you don't have to go during the summer when the crowds are there, go in the fall. Well, I have to say, I didn't see much of a difference between.
Exactly.
I kind of felt like it was just as crowded.
For somewhere like Acadia, I think it might make sense to have a reservation system on the weekend, not during the week. And also, there's the environmental concerns. When you have too many people coming into the parks, it can damage some of the fragile parts of the ecosystems of the parks.
Yeah, there's those two main concerns, right? You just mentioned the ecosystem, right? And the environmental concerns. And then there's the tourism concerns. So they're saying like that people are literally showing up and sitting in bottleneck traffic for hours and then just turning around and leaving in frustration. So like that's not a good national parks experience either. So, you know, they're kind of seeing what they can do about this. And the article looks at, I would say, three major parks that have these big issues. Like Acadia is one of them. Yosemite is another. And then they really focus on Zion, which is one of
that
the most
really
visited.
That really may be the first one to go to a reservation system because they're just getting crushed there.
Right.
And, I mean, my theory on this is they should try everything they can first in terms of shuttling people in or carpooling, whatever it is. But if that doesn't work and the parks really do become too jammed up with traffic and there's environmental damage, then I think this might be the way they have to go, at least during high visitation times.
Well, Zion proposed three different options, right, to this public forum to kind of get like, you know, open comment, open public comment for feedback. And they said there were three things that people could like choose between and say what their thoughts were on. And the first was 100% online reservation system. So in other words, unless you have that sort of reserved ticketed entrance ahead of showing up, you cannot get access to the park. Then there would be a second option, which would be a reservation system for parts of the park. And then the third option was keeping things the same, right? Like who just raise your hand if you want to keep everything the same. So, you know, I really did have my concerns with the 100% online reservation system. And I have to say one of those was just sort of online access, right? Like, and sort of that democracy of people showing up at a national park and sort of like finding their way through it, like literally finding their park. There really are people that visit national parks that way.
And also then people learn how to game the system and get advantages over it. That could be a problem too.
Totally.
Now, I would say we're Acadia experts at this point because we've been 5 or 6 times. And I like that second option there for somewhere like Acadia, reservations for certain parts of the park, because in Acadia, it's the Park Loop Road area that is so crazy and packed. But if you go to other sections of Acadia National Park, which is, by the way, a pretty small national park, you could be on a trail completely alone in midsummer on a Saturday. So by just having reservations to some of the most popular mm-hmm. sites like Thunder Hole or the right. Beehive Hike, then you might push people to go explore other parts of the park that in many ways are equally beautiful, but they're just less trafficked because people don't quite know how to get there.
And that's my favorite suggestion too. I really like the idea that these parks can sort of target areas that have extreme environmental like stress right now from overuse and also extreme stress from crowds. And they target those areas and they say, look, obviously people really want to visit these areas, say the Narrows, you know, or things like that. So we are going to have a time ticket kind of a thing. This is what they do in DC. You can't get to the top of the National Monument, of the Washington Monument, without a time ticket because it's too crowded.
There's limited space up there.
Exactly. So what you have to do that in advance. And then I think they reserve a certain amount of day of, you know, for people that walk up. But you're like, you cannot bank on getting those. So, you know, that's just the reality of getting to the top of the Washington Monument. And I like that idea for certain things like the Narrows maybe or that Angel's Landing, which is a really popular hike that people just say is far too crowded.
And has an element of danger to it. So
right.
Then limiting the number of people up there could also be a major safety concern.
But then the people that are just driving through, right? The people that aren't sure that they're going to go to the national park that day, but end up wanting to take an extra day and go back in, right? Say you had reservations one day and you want more of that park. We've done that before. We didn't know that we were going to be able to make it to Crater Lake this summer. And, you know, it was on our way somewhere and we really tried to push that in. And that was a last minute arrival and it was amazing.
And it would be heartbreaking to pull up to Crater Lake and they'd be like, sold out today.
Yeah.
But if you pull up and they said, you know what, this section of the park is not open today because
the
tickets
the
are sold out, but you could
yeah.
go over here. So, Stephanie, I'm sold on the hybrid version. I like option number two.
I like option
thank you, thank
number
you for talking
two.
Us all through it.
All right. Keeping things the same, obviously, it can't happen. Listen to this. Zion had 4.3 million visitors in 2016. That's up 60%. From a decade ago. Okay. So obviously things can't stay the same if 60% more people are visiting 10 years later. Things have to change and we have to be smart about the changes. But ultimately, I feel like all the changes have to serve two things: preservation of these amazing spaces in America and also the American public who these spaces have been preserved for. You know, so that's my opinion.
Well said.
Thanks.
All right. Now, how excited are you about having the Fit RV, James and Steph, back on the show? On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you?
11, please.
I was at a 12 and a half.
Oh, I love James and Steph. They, if you are not familiar with the Fit RV and their YouTube videos and their blog, you really should follow them because they just know their chops. Like they just produce fantastic content that's so worthwhile for RVers. even if you're not as fit as they are, which let's face it, none of us are.
See, the thing is, they're not intimidating about mm-hmm. how fit they are. I mean, they could just sort of flex at you and scare you yeah. and then make you want to turn off their YouTube videos. But they're fun, they're funny, and they're welcoming, and they're just terrific. We yeah. love them to death. So they were on the show over 2 years ago. It's about time we had them back on, and we picked the perfect topic to get them back on. They went to Europe this summer on a camper van trip, and as soon as we saw that, we're like, we are going to have them on the show to talk about their trip camper vanning through Europe. So stay tuned for a lot of great, great information about RVing or camper vanning in Europe with the Fit RV. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are incredibly excited to be here with James and Steph Adanero from the Fit RV and thefitrv.com. And it's been over 2 years since we've had them on the show, so we're super duper excited to have them back. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
Jayco's Melbourne Classy Motorhome is top line comfort backed by rock solid durability and an industry leading 2 year limited warranty. Built on a Mercedes 3500 chassis and powered by a 188 horsepower V6 turbo diesel engine, the Melbourne will keep you going. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome to the show, James and Steph, after 2 years.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello, hello. It doesn't seem like it's been 2 years, really.
It's so great to be back, but boy, time did fly.
Yeah, that's. I'm having to check my calendar on that.
He doesn't believe it for
They haven't been on the show in about 2.5 years, but we have seen them recently, and I do want to confirm that they are both still incredibly fit.
They're fit. I'm telling you, there's no doubt about it. They've got street cred.
Maybe fitter than ever.
Now, I like it.
Oh, yeah.
We got so much to talk about with you guys. So you guys did a huge camper van trip in Europe this summer. And as soon as we saw you rolling out that content, we were like, gotta get them on the show. So we're going to start out by talking about your trip in general. Then we're going to talk about the Truma factory. And we're going to wrap up by talking about some major differences between North American RV culture and European RV culture. And there is nobody better we could talk to about these topics. So let's get rolling talking about your trip in general.
Yeah, guys. So just tell us a little bit about how this whole thing came about in general and, you know, how you even started jumping into planning an RV trip to Europe.
Well, we've wanted to do the Dusseldorf show for a long time. The
huge RV show.
Yes.
In Dusseldorf.
The biggest one in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so we've been talking about that in our social media and on our website. And Truma, we actually have a Truma Combi, which is a heater, water heater combo unit in a rig. They got a hold of us and offered to send us on a trip because they wanted us to visit their factory and try out one of their RVs over there. So that's how the whole RV tour came to be, is through Truma. But
and then, when Truma calls, you answer and say yes.
When they offer a trip to Europe, you definitely answer.
I'm sure they probably played it a little bit cool.
The reality of planning a trip to Europe quickly set in, right? Because the Dusseldorf show is in August, and that's kind of high season for vacationing. And we were going to be in Germany, and Germans have this sort of reputation for being very planned out and organized. And so to have to think of, you know, oh my gosh, we've got, you know, 5-6 days that we have to have everything dialed in before
right.
we go.
Right. So trip planning was a challenge because we were new to it. We didn't know how to go about it, but we did quickly learn some good strategies.
Yeah.
So already it's sounding to me like, I mean, we won't talk too much about the culture aspect till later, but okay. So, but the culture, it sounds like to me is a reservations kind of culture. Cause in America, it can kind of go both ways depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to think people have been living and populating Europe for a lot longer than here, and they got a lot less space.
Yeah.
So yeah, we didn't see – we've heard there are places you can go like boondock or just show up, you know, and you can stay there. We didn't encounter
right.
any of those.
Yeah, you mostly have to camp in a campsite where you're not just going to pull up anywhere, which you can do more over in North America. But you really do want to think about reservations, especially when you're not from the area. So.
Yeah.
So how did you think about those reservations? How did you, decide on your destinations?
That was, well, we had talked to a number of people who had been there before,
yes.
and they recommended like towns and things in general areas that they recommended that we stop at. Mm-hmm. And so once we had those kind of just cities or areas or attractions picked out,
right.
we kind of did the same thing we would do here. And we went to Google Maps and campground sure enough, it'll find them.
Right. You can find campgrounds that way and then you can read reviews. So it was like an entrance. We'd find all the campgrounds in an area. So we knew we wanted to go see Cinderella's Castle, Neuschwanstein. I butchered that up.
We won't question any of your pronunciations.
So we knew that was near Füssen, Germany, and I probably just killed that name
probably, too.
And so we looked at all the campgrounds in the area, picked our first, tried to call and make reservations, but that was booked. So then we got our second.
So, and it's besides just Google, I wanted to point out, we did use an app. There's a ACSI. If you're going to go camping in Europe, that's kind of – they're not like KOA, but it's like a big directory of
campgrounds
in Europe.
Right.
And they have an app. And so we did use the app too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, from there, we actually made a lot of reservations either online or a lot of times I had to call. The problem we had in August is that that's really their high season, and a lot of places wanted like a minimum 7-night stay, and we had like 6 days total.
Yeah, that was interesting. They wouldn't take reservations unless we would agree to stay 7 nights. So I've only run across
one single campground that around us that does that, and we've never stayed there.
Yeah. So, but some of them we actually wound up and did stay at. You know, they would tell us we can't make a reservation now, but if you call back a couple days before you arrive, and if we have space available, we will make a reservation for you then.
Yeah.
And so that tended to work out okay. It may be a little uncomfortable to have to wait that long until we're like, you know, all right, well, we're packed and the Uber's on its way. Well, let's try to call that place in Germany again, you know. Made me a little uncomfortable, but in the end, it all worked out.
Yeah, things have a funny way of working out like that. Yeah.
Any language barrier issues when calling a campground in Germany? Or do they all speak English pretty nicely?
I called in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, and they all spoke just fine English. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they would have to get, you know, hold on a second and let me get, you know, Helga, who speaks better English than me, you know, but there was never a problem actually with, at least in the countries we tried.
Right. And I think on the trip, there were only two times where we had language barriers. One was a waitress in a very small town in Switzerland, and the other was a gas station. And I don't remember where that was, if that was Germany, Austria, or Switzerland.
It was Germany. It was on the way back.
Germany. Okay. Coming through at a gas station, the attendant didn't have English.
Yeah.
So other than that, everybody spoke English and we had no trouble communicating.
And it helps that everyone over there knows who you are, right, as the Fit Art Day. I mean, when you came out of the airport, it was kind of like when the Beatles first came to New York City.
No.
We did get recognized at the Dusseldorf show, and that was just so neat. Somebody came running up, a Belgian guy, and wanted a picture taken with us, and we were just
flabbergasted.
Yes, that somebody would recognize over there. And
you know,
very humbling.
Since we started posting these observations and videos from Europe, we never realized how many European readers and viewers we had because we started getting comments. They came out of the woodwork when we started posting stuff about Europe.
Right. On our website, we would put up blog posts, and if you go down and look at the comments, most of the comments are from European readers. So that was really interesting.
Well, a lot of your content's universal, right? I mean, if you're doing fitness on the road, that translates really well to any other culture, basically, that has a camper van or RV culture.
We try.
We try to be universal. All right. Well, so let's dive a little bit into the actual travel itself. Okay. Let's just go through where you stopped. You had four major stops, right?
We did.
Yeah, we did. So first we did that thing when we arrived in Munich that everyone says not to do, and that's we went right to sleep, and that was terrible because it just messed us up for days.
Yeah, but we flew into Munich. We should let that be known because that's near where the Truma factory was, and that's where our RV was to pick up.
Right.
So flew in on, I think, a Wednesday, and then picked up
the RV
the next day in the morning.
And then took off to Innsbruck, Austria.
Yes.
And driving over the roads are fairly narrow, and the RV was a stick shift.
We were in kind of a classy, think of like a Winnebago View Navion size rig, which is huge over there. Mostly, you know, camper vans are what most people are in. So we felt like we were taken up the whole road both ways, driving that thing along. So that was a bit terrifying.
And what kind of rig was that? I mean, just give us a little, you know,
was
give
that us LMC, some beats. Yeah, it was an LMC Breezer. So it was based on a Fiat Ducato, which is kind of like a Ram ProMaster. It was a diesel version, and it was a 5-speed.
And so, are both of you proficient shift, you know,
yes,
manual drivers?
Yeah, that's no problem. But I didn't drive over there at all.
Okay.
The roads are very different than here.
And so if you are going to drive around in Germany, probably one of the things that I almost learned the hard way that you really need to know is Einbahnstraße means one-way street. You don't want to learn that when you're wrong way.
Now he wakes up screaming in his sleep.
All their roads were so well paved. We were never on a road with potholes and bumps. It was incredible. I don't know how they do that. They might be narrow.
High taxes. Those
taxes.
They got something going on over there with the roads. It was amazing.
Yes.
So anyway, we went to Innsbruck. We had actually weirdly selected this particular campground, Nattersee. Mm-hmm. Because the reviews we saw online said, oh my gosh, the showers are so amazing. Like, hundreds of reviews, all raving about the showers. And so we're like, okay, I don't know what this is, but I've got to see what these amazing showers are.
And they were. They were very modern and luxurious, and they were huge.
Like AstroTurf floor in the one I had.
So that was cool. But there was also about 3 different restaurants at this place. Oh, and Stephanie and Jeremy, your kids would have loved it. There were these lakes with these huge blow-up climbing toys on them, and kids everywhere. And that's an interesting thing about RVing in Europe is it's a younger crowd who's RVing with kids. And so these campgrounds are designed to draw in the family. So there's always going to be activities for the kids.
And James was climbing on all those big floaties too, just to
I tried. I tried. So, and the, let's see, the other thing it Vitz now, besides being very, you know, the hills are alive, Sound of Music kind of thing, right? Because we were in the Austrian Alps.
Oh, yes. Well, Vitz now was Switzerland, though. You're talking about Innsbruck.
Are we going on to stop two, James?
Stop two, yes.
Yeah, well, anyway, so we did drive into Switzerland after that, I guess. And to get to Switzerland, we had to drive on really alpine roads. And, like, there are a lot of tunnels over there to get through the Alps. And that was kind of interesting because, you know, you always have that feeling when you're in a tall vehicle, like, eesh, am I going to make that overpass kind of a thing? And in a tunnel, it was particularly unnerving.
Yes.
But then some of the tunnels were closed, and then they had to route us over alpine passes that were never intended for large vehicles, but we're going with semis coming the other way on a 2-lane road.
Beautiful, but it was terrifying.
We would call it a sidewalk here.
Yes.
A 2-lane road. Terrifying, but we got into Switzerland, into Vitz now, and that was probably our favorite stop.
Absolutely.
Of the whole trip.
I always tell people now, if I were to win the lottery, you're going to find me in Vitz now, Switzerland. That's where I'm going. It's just this incredible town set on a mountainside. It's in the Alps, and it's surrounded by a beautiful lake with some mountains out in it. Just so scenic. It's hard to describe with words. You just got to go there.
Was the driving so terrible that you are so frightening that you wouldn't want to do it again? Like for people listening to our podcast thinking, well, I would like to go here. I mean, was it that bad that you wouldn't want to go back?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that bad, but it was – you got to pay attention.
Well, and I think James is just talking about this detour that we got sent on through the Alps. That was terrifying. But the regular highways, the motorways, they're fine.
Yeah,
they're as you would expect over here. So we don't want to make it sound like it's all awful. It's just the detour was.
Yeah.
Now, kinds of things did you do in Vitz now? Like what kinds of was it the kind of like small city where you're eating a lot and, you know, doing that kind of thing? Or was it more outdoorsy?
Yeah. So it's a small town. It's not a city at all. We just we did a lot of wandering through the town, and then we did some jogging up into the mountains. So that was kind of our activities.
Yeah, there was an interesting like apartment complex. It almost looked like little bunkers that had like grass roofs, and they were like dug into the side of the mountain. It was really interesting to see.
There were some restaurants there that we tried out.
That was the one where it rained like incredibly much, and we were seated outside. guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as things to do, it's more like getting yourself out, getting up into the mountains from there. And there is the lake. We didn't use the lake at that setting, but there is activities you can do out on the water.
Yeah, that's Lake Lucerne is that lake.
Oh, that's a famous lake, right? I think
Okay. Yeah. So it's a very touristy area, but this particular town on the lake was a small, very idyllic town to visit. So.
And then where'd you go?
Well, then we went to Lindau, Germany, on another lake that was on Lake Constance.
Yeah, that's a very popular lake, too. And it's an interesting lake because it's on three different countries. So it's on Switzerland, Austria, and Germany. We were on the German part of the lake.
Right.
So there's bike trails all around the lake. I think it was like 170 miles. We rented some bikes, and we did about 50 miles. Just so I think we got all three countries in on that ride.
Yeah, we did.
And we got lost a lot.
A lot.
That is such an epic bike ride, though, going into three different countries on one bike ride. That's awesome.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah. So that we love that little town, another touristy small town right on the water.
We were in this is probably the nuttiest campground we stayed at, the Gitzenweiler Hof or whatever.
Oh, yes. Gitzenweiler.
And that was a little bit out of town, but it was right on a bus line, and we could get on the bus for free because we were staying at the campground. But when we first arrived there, we're trying to check in, and there were like medieval jousting and sword play going
on. Fire juggling, and there's thousands of
people at the campground.
At this campground, it's just total festive environment. This place is definitely made for kids. Now, James had talked about showers at the other place. This place had shower rooms for kids that were set up like a Chuck E. Cheese kind of place. There were
imagine showering at Chuck E. Cheese.
Like, wait, so this
I'm
is kind like,
of grossed out by this concept.
No,
actually,
settle in a minute. Yeah. Showering at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it's open. So the shower room is open. There's little shower nozzles hidden all around the kids' shower room, and they can shower by their favorite little cartoon characters or go in tunnels. It was pretty crazy. So the campgrounds over there are interesting. There's always bakeries. So you can get bread or fresh pastries in the morning. And there's always a bunch of restaurants where there's tables outside where you can eat outside.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, they do definitely cater to kids. There's always things for kids to do.
It almost sounds to me like the European version of a Jellystone as you're describing it. Like, you know, just really that family-friendly activity-based campground where people literally go there just to let their kids have a whole bunch of fun.
Yeah, that's probably a fair characterization.
Yeah.
But so this Gitzenweiler Hof, like I said, that was...
Which translates into nutty campground.
Yeah.
Nutty, yes. Very nutty campground.
We actually stayed there for 2 days.
Yeah.
Because we kind of just walked around Lindau one day, and then the other day we did a bike ride.
Yeah.
So, and then from there, we bolted out of there and went to as Steph mentioned before, the little Cinderella-looking castle, you know, in Füssen, Germany.
Yep. And that's very touristy, but it had to be done. I had to see that castle. It's just so incredible to see in person. And so it was pretty easy. We just went into the town, we got some tickets, and we followed the masses up this hill and did our tour. But there's thousands of people around. I ended up taking a bunch of pictures of just how many people were around touring the castle.
Yeah, I got pictures of the scenery and, you know, the castle perched over the valley and stuff. Got pictures of, like, you know, crowds
people.
Of tour groups all wearing the same shirt.
Steph, was it everything that you thought it would be, or did the crowds interfere with the experience you had been dreaming about?
Maybe they did interfere, but, you know, they were there like I was. Who am I to take away their experience too. I understand why they were there. But you know, we're just not big crowd people. We normally our RVing over here is to more remote and serene places. So this was a different experience for us.
Now I have to bluntly ask you both, like, did you like these campgrounds? Like, I'm not getting a total read. I mean, did you kind of feel a little bit out of place? Like, this is not where I want to be on my European vacation? Or did you really enjoy the experience and would like to return to those types of campgrounds?
That's interesting.
It is a great question.
So I can say when I was in the kids' shower, I thought, okay, I do not want to be here at all. Thank goodness there's nobody in the shower. I'm out of here.
Well, I think because it was new and novel, it was okay and it was cool to see and experience. But if that's how all RVing was over here, I think we would eventually get sick of it.
So I want to say to our listeners who may not be as familiar with your guys, you two YouTube videos and everything or haven't checked them out, we'll say yet. James and Steph are from Utah. I don't know if that's where they're originally from, but that's where they're based. And so obviously being out in that part of the country, there's just a lot of really dispersed camping. There's a lot of very remote campgrounds, state campgrounds, federal lands and everything. So I think that that's even more of a contrast to this than maybe somebody from our part of the world where we're in the East Coast and used to even smaller private campgrounds.
Oh, well, that's a good
probably,
point.
Probably a fair, fair analysis.
And we haven't done much RVing at all in the East, so our experience is probably very different than your experience, just, you know, East to West.
Absolutely. We just took a trip out to New Mexico and we had, you know, a whole segment on our show about even the things that were different about camping out there, you know, than here. So it is, I think that if you could probably come up with really diverse types of camping, you could probably put that these European campgrounds next to your Utah campgrounds.
And if we'd had more time, like if we did it again, we would probably try to find like the place in Vitsnau, for example, was not the Jellystone or Disney like atmosphere, right? That was more just some camping spots.
True. That was a smaller campground. It was quieter.
We would find more of those. And we've heard from people that there are, you know, things like just camping parks that towns will set up that are kind of more along the lines of boondocking or, you know, remote camping that we tend to do. And if we were doing it again, we would probably intersperse some of that. And, you know, eventually we would find, you know, our happy place, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's hard enough getting dialed in your own state and in your own region of the country in terms of finding the exact places you want to camp. And you guys are in a foreign country, for goodness sake, right?
Right.
You would refine the trip for sure next time.
Out of the four campgrounds, do you have one that kind of emerged as your favorite? Would that be the Vitsnau one?
Yeah, the Vitsnau Switzerland definitely was our favorite place. And it wasn't the campground itself. It was just the area.
The place,
it was just pretty much magical. I just loved everything about being there, and I didn't want to leave.
The restaurants at that nutty Gitzenweilerhof I kind of enjoyed those.
All right. And Gitzenweilerhof was the one in Lindau,
it's the one with
Germany,
the jousting.
With the jousting on Lake Constance.
I have one last follow-up question before we kind of wrap up this travel segment. You mentioned these bakeries. Does the Fit RV indulge in baked goods?
I'll let Steph answer that.
Well, we got fresh bread in the morning. And then the other thing they would have at their little stores was cheese and lunch meat. So we did a lot of their fresh bread, cheese, and lunch meat. And even in the lunch meat, like turkey, it was turkey.
Yeah.
Even in the morning, it was just so nice. We don't do that normally here.
I can picture the conversation. Now we have to go for a 500-mile bike ride. We had bread.
There was lots and lots of runs happening while we were there. So
indulging.
We're super excited to come back for a whole other segment with you guys where we're going to talk about the Truma factory. And also, I'm incredibly excited to talk about just differences between European RVs or camper vans and American RVs. So we'll be back in a second with more great conversation with James and Steph from the Fit RV.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here for another segment with James and Steph Adanero from the Fit RV, and we're going to talk about the Truma Tour, and we're going to talk about similarities and differences between American and European camping culture. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. If your RV needs a good wash and wax after a busy camping season, check out the Thetford Premium RV Wash and Wax. It's really important to use products on your RV that are actually developed specifically to protect the paint and decals on your rig. So the Thetford Premium RV Wash and Wax is going to get your RV looking shiny and clean without doing any damage. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And welcome back to the show, James and Steph. You guys still here?
We are.
Oh, phew.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you stayed.
They're probably doing push-ups while they're talking to us.
One-handed.
They were probably getting a little cardio there, but...
Now, Truma's a very cool company, a very interesting company. So tell us about your trip there and what you were doing at Truma headquarters and that whole experience. Fill us in on the details.
Sure. You know, Truma sponsored our trip over there. And, you know, the first thing when they put us in that RV that we went around in, it was like chock full of all their products, right? Mm-hmm. Over here, they're mostly known for the Truma Combi heater and water heater and the Truma AquaGo,
correct,
which is a tankless water heater. Mm-hmm. But over there, they've got a whole bunch of other stuff. They've got, you know, air conditioners and like trailer mover products and stuff. So they put us in an RV with all their stuff. And then we came back to the factory. Now, the factory, you know, until just a few years ago, Truma was, I guess, completely unknown over here. But they've got like 90% of the RV market for like heating appliances in Europe. It's
right.
Insane.
So they're very well known in Europe, but they're just starting to get known over here.
Yeah. So we had done a video where we had kind of highlighted the Truma Combi in a Winnebago Travato, and we've done interviews with folks from Truma before. And so they wanted us to come and do a factory tour. And we're glad we did. It was very interesting. So they're very focused on quality, I mm-hmm. guess, is the thing I would say the most. First of all, it's the cleanest factory I've ever been in. And I've been in a number of factories, and this one, you could eat off the floor in this factory.
Well, and we were surprised at how large and stylish and modern the entire complex was. It was more than just one building. There was a bunch of buildings and
yeah. And they had like a little railway with like They had robots and like this.
Yes, robots.
Cart automatically moving parts from one part of the factory to another. So we saw, you know, the facility where they build the Truma Combi.
Right.
And in addition, Steph kind of tuned out for this, but I got to talk to a lot of the engineers who were responsible for building the products, and they actually had like a cutaway model of the Truma Combi that with like actual propane, there were like, you know, flames shooting out of it. It was awesome. And you could never do that over here because someone would burn themselves and then there'd be a lawsuit. But
well, have we even said what the Truma Combi is? So for those people who don't know, it's a heater and a water heater all in one tiny unit. And it's very highly technical and kind of complicated of a system.
Yeah.
It's very different than the typical RV heater and water heater you see.
And it takes up the space of pretty much just the water heater. Like if
right.
you look at the water heater, a standard suburban 6-gallon water heater, whatever. If you look at a standard RV water heater, the Truma Combi takes up the space of just that, but it's then also a heater.
Right. And we got to see how it's made. It's very interesting. It's a combination of man-made and computer-made, parts. And one of the things that we loved is we got to see this gentleman working on a Truma Combi, and we learned that the computer won't even allow him to be able to lift it up if the perfect amount of screws isn't all accounted for. So, like, you know how you can go into some factory chores and you'll see things like screws or parts laying on the floor? Doesn't happen at Truma. They are so advanced and modern. Every screw is accounted for on those machines.
Now, James, I thought you said that Steph had tuned out.
Well, she tuned in for the screw thing. That was pretty interesting. You physically could not pick the part
right.
up off the workbench
until
you had put in that number of screws. It was interesting.
And that's kind of how the whole factory was. It was just so advanced. We've done a lot of factory tours in the RV industry, and we've never seen anything this modern or technical before.
They're also very focused on being green.
Oh, yes.
Like, you know, if you've been to some like an employee cafeteria or something here, and then they'll have like, you know, 6 trash bins where you have to separate out all your trash for recycling and whatever. They took that to the extreme. They did a lot of recycling. They had green roofs on the building.
Oh, yeah. Their solar power, they said it was running 25% of their total power requirements. I think that's a big deal, 25%.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. They treat their wastewater. They have 2 rainwater cisterns, which gather, I think it was like over 50,000 liters of rainwater each year, using recyclable materials in their products. So this was important for us to see. We didn't even know this about them until we got to the factory, how environmentally friendly they are. And they're very proud of it.
Yeah.
Did you get the sense that Truma or the European industry in general is in some ways light years ahead of the American RV industry? Were you left feeling that way a little bit?
I don't don't know if I'd say light years ahead, but they're definitely focused on putting out a quality product. Like,
right.
You know, we heard from when we were at the Dusseldorf show, and this isn't necessarily Truma, but we heard from people at the Dusseldorf show that, you know, like an American RV manufacturer asked, you know, how do you test your RVs for leaks? You know, and, mm-hmm. and the European would say, well, we don't. They don't leak. They're not supposed to leak. Why would we test them for leaks?
That's right. You do.
And that's kind of the attitude there.
Right.
It's like, no, it's as it should be. It is perfect, and
yeah.
we make it the best that we can.
But Truma does do tons of research and development. We saw a bunch of very modern labs, and they have climate chambers where they create situations of extreme temperatures, and they test their models in there. And they even do real-world testing where they lend out their RVs to their employees. And then the employees have to come back after a trip and, I don't know, write it up, or there's some sort of test they have to take to talk about how the products.
Yeah, I had to fill out a log showing where I drove every day and how many miles I put on and when I turned on this and that.
It was German organization. You loved that, didn't you?
I kind of did.
That seems to have suited you very well, James.
Yes.
So, but they also – one of the things they had at Truma – so products that we don't have over here that I kind of wish we did.
What's that?
So, like – one in particular that I'm thinking of, and this might come in handy for you guys. They have like trailer mover kind of things, right? Little motors.
Yeah. We've heard from people that have gone over there that they loved that for the small.
Oh my.
So that's not the camper van. Those are the caravans, right? So they call those the caravans, and they have these trailer movers. I know. And I don't understand why that's not a more prevalent product in the States.
I don't know, but I got to take one for a test drive. Like, they had one on a caravan in their parking lot, and I got to drive it around the parking lot.
Yeah, it's just a little remote control. That looked really fun to play with.
that was amazing.
Well, and we have people here on the East Coast that have such tight driveways, and in mm-hmm. fact, we have a really tight driveway, mm-hmm. and our RV is always kind of burst out of our driveway. Something like that would be excellent.
Trailer movers was one interesting product. They had another one that was like a – so the way they do propane over in Europe is different from here. And they all have – imagine going to like Blue Rhino and getting a bottle and, you know – and I guess on trailers here you do. You know, you have a bottle on front that you can just remove or swap out, right? Well, even on the motorhomes, that's how they do it over there. And they had a little device they were working on that they were just releasing at mm-hmm. the Dusseldorf show that used sonar to fire sound waves up through the propane to see what the level of the propane was. Mm-hmm. And then it would report that, you know, like deadly accurate on a smartphone app.
That's really cool. So you could check it remotely even. Like if you're at work and you want to see, do I need to get propane for the campground this weekend, you could check it using your smartphone.
Or if you have a seasonal campsite, you can check your seasonal propane levels before you go out to the site. That's pretty cool.
So that was amazing.
Accuracy would be really awesome because I know on our unit, we don't have the most accurate measure of our propane. So
right.
I would love to have something that accurate.
Yeah. And then I guess the other one that they have is European air conditioners, which
so much quieter.
Yeah, that's kind of a common complaint, I guess, is the noise level from air conditioners in RVs.
Yes.
Not over there. There's one of our videos that we did while we were over there. We're actually kicked on the air conditioner in the middle of a video. And, you know, it's, whoa, that's it. You know, it was actually fairly cool. And yes. Truma makes one of those.
That's a big deal because when you say that's a top complaint, it truly is. I mean, like we have two air conditioners in our 34-foot toy hauler. And the one that is just for our bedroom is quite loud. And I think that's the case with most RVs that have the second air conditioner just for the bedroom. It's like a wind tunnel in the bedroom when you turn this thing on. I mean, I would love something like that was more whisper quiet when in use.
Right, right. And it also had like four different settings too, which was nice. The one that we currently have, I think it has two settings, or does it have three? But the last one only had two.
Yeah, but so, the one over there, it was more adjustable.
Right, more adjustable, had a night mode, which would be even quieter.
So. Yeah.
Smaller RVs need quieter air conditioners too. I mean, you're in a smaller space. You can't have that loud cranking AC that might be okay.
Tell me about it. That's what we have in our van, and boy, it would be pretty nice to have something.
Well, has Winnebago scheduled the sit-down feedback session with you guys
yet? Let's hope they're listening to this podcast.
We'll make sure. We'll have to make sure we send them a link to this one. Just FYI, right? Some thoughts.
That's right.
Now, listen, I mean,
I think the RV manufacturers sort of know that the loud air conditioner is a thing, and they would like to fix it, but, you know, they don't make the air conditioners, so.
Right.
So what are the plans for Truma? You know, they brought you over there to see what they're doing over there. We know, I mean, we've talked to them just about the Combi or the, what is it, the Aquago? Is that the?
Yes.
Okay. So we've talked with them about that, which is a really great, you know, aftermarket add-on if anybody's interested in that. And I think it's actually pretty affordable for what you get with that. But, you know, what are their plans for expansion in the U.S.? I mean, have you really had that conversation with them, or is that a very nebulous kind of arena right now?
No, they are. They are planning to expand. I think they're opening just now a service center in Florida, I believe, for Truma here in the U.S.
Yep. And in Germany, they even had these mobile techs that would drive around in vans and come to you if you had any service needs. I would love to see them bring that here. They didn't really tell us much about what's coming, but they definitely wanted our feedback. Like, they asked a lot about air conditioners. Yeah. I'd like to hope that they're trying to develop one to bring over here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says a lot that they're working with people like you guys. I mean, they obviously want to move more into the American market, and one way to do that is to work with knowledgeable influencers like the two of you.
High users, too. You guys are really using these products.
I like how she called us knowledgeable. Or actually, it was Jeremy. Jeremy called us knowledgeable.
And smart.
I also called you influencers.
S-M-R-T.
And good looking.
I called you influencers.
All right.
But the service center, I think, is kind of a big deal for them, because I think they've been just in Elkhart thus far. But now they've got a second service center in Florida. Mobile techs would be a lot harder to work out here than in Germany.
Sure.
Because we've got a lot more ground
to cover.
But go to Florida. Yeah. I mean, just like with the other concept, I mean, there's so many RVers in Florida year-round, and they're selling things like air conditioners. You know, that they could roll that out in high-density places with lots of RVs.
Yeah, yep. So I think you're going to be seeing a lot more from Truma coming up. And, yeah, who knows what's coming. I'm excited to see what they bring next.
All right, so let's move on to sort of, like, we've definitely done a lot of comparing already, just implicit in your traveling and in your visit to the Truma factory. But let's just kind of take a little bit of a higher view right now. What things did you find, before we start talking about the differences, right? What were sort of the universal ties? What were the things that you were surprised to find were very similar about RV culture in Europe?
Well, so in spite of the fact that, you know, there may be technical differences in the rigs, I think if you took a North American RVer and you plopped them in a European rig in the middle of Europe somewhere, they'd figure it out in pretty short order.
Yeah, I mean, in general, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, you know, you've got there's not water. Okay, I need to turn on the water pump. Oh, this is working on 12 volt. This is working on 120. I mean,
there's
you figure
a
all that
post
stuff out.
I need to plug in my shore power to that post.
Yeah.
The general things are the same.
The other thing that I thought was sort of similar or you know, pleasantly similar, I guess I'll say, is, you know, there's sort of that camaraderie of, you know, amongst RVers and campers at the campground. And that was very much evident and maybe even a little more so over there. Like, one of my favorite stories from our trip is we were sitting in the crazy place, the Gitzenweilerhof, and somebody came in with what for there would be a very large caravan, a very large travel trailer. And, you know, in the U.S., when you see someone, you know, trying to get that too big of a fifth wheel into a too small of a space, it's almost like you want to get out the lawn chairs and popcorn and call them a marriage counselor. But over there, the guy, it was interesting. The guy just, like, you know, raised his hand and whistled, and, like, eight guys from all over the campground, myself included, ran over to this guy's trailer.
Right.
And he unhooked it. And
there's a universal symbol over there.
Yeah.
There's a symbol for when you want help. Because here we always say, like, don't offer help unless people ask for it.
Right.
Leave them alone and don't stare.
Yeah. So, but there, the trailer actually had handles on it. And, you know, we all kind of got around the corners of the rig. And we physically, he just unhooked. He didn't even try to back it into the spot. We all just drug it in there for him.
Yeah, and it was just all these strangers that just gathered on his campsite helped him out, and it was like normal.
Yeah, and afterwards it was like, all right, here's your beer, thanks. You know,
you would have crushed our souls if you said, well, the major difference is that campers over in Europe really are
not very friendly
at all. I mean, it would have just like ruined the whole thing. So really glad to hear that, right?
Yeah, just the opposite. I think everybody's in vacation modes, so they're in a happy place and very friendly at every campground we were at.
Yeah.
Anything else different, or should we move to the anything else that's similar, or should we move to the things that are different?
No, I mean, so much of traveling in another country is you have to learn kind of how to do things.
Yes.
Like, how do I get gas? How do I, you know, make a hotel reservation? How, you know, what's the protocol for that? And, you know, happy to report, in most cases, the protocol for, like, how do you do this or that at a campground was pretty much the same. You know,
yes.
You show up, you check in.
Well, except you pay after on your way out. That was different.
That was different.
Yes.
But, you know, it's you'd be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, if you went there, even, you know, assuming you got someone that could speak the same language as you, which mm-hmm. most of them did.
Yeah.
That part of it was also very similar. So,
well, and I think that's a huge, it may be one thing, but I think it's a huge thing, right? To like letting our listeners know that if you decide to do a somewhat out of the box thing, like a camper van vacation in Europe, you know, your knowledge of RVing from America is translatable, right? Like you can
yes.
kind of bring a lot of your knowledge with you and it's going to be applicable and you can probably have a pretty good time doing it, you know?
Absolutely.
Definitely. You're going to have a good time and it's not going to be as intimidating as it sounds.
Yeah. Don't let it be intimidating
yeah.
because it's more alike than you think. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, we can't get into like all the individual similarities because it's just the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So.
Well, now what about, so the things that kind of, it's always, I always find differences a bit, and it's going to sound corny, but delightful, right? Like when we travel around America, one of the things that I love is finding things that are different than where
yeah.
I live. And so like, what kind of you know, kind of delightful differences where it was like, oh, that's so funny, you know, or that's so cool.
They don't have to be delightful.
Or,
Well, I think one of the delightful differences is the way everybody set up some sort of tent outside their rigs, and they set up a table, and they would have chairs around it and food. And food was such a big part of the camping experience,
mm, yeah.
pulling everybody into this little area outside. So it was delightful to see people out of their rigs enjoying their space. And it was just every single rig had that. Wasn't that interesting to you? Or?
It was.
Yeah.
The delightful difference I was thinking of was the, I don't, should I probably can't say fresh baked bread every morning, but that was pretty darn
the bakery.
That sounds delightful to me.
Yes.
We have a version of that near us in different Amish areas in Pennsylvania and Ohio and everything, where the Amish folks will bring by their carts.
The horse and buggy
yeah,
will come into the campground and you can
oh.
smell the.
See, now that would be a delightful difference even for us.
Oh, yeah.
We don't get that here.
I would love that. What a neat experience.
When you come east, we'll give you the scoop on a good, you know, Amish baked goods place.
Fantastic. I'm going to hit you up for that.
So other delightful differences?
Well, I don't know about delightful differences, but I mean, there are a number of differences. And,
yes.
and even in, like, I guess, the rigs themselves, right? A lot of the things we take for granted and we wouldn't buy an RV if it didn't have this, they just don't have over there. Like, we had an air conditioner in our RV, but most of them over there do not have
right.
air conditioners.
Buying an air conditioner for your RV is optional over there, and most people choose not to.
Yeah, most of them don't have microwaves.
Yep.
And I don't even think there was a single rig over there that had a generator. I'm sure they must have
nope.
them, but we didn't see a single one.
Yep. Even at the show, we looked. We tried to find a rig with an air conditioner, microwave, or generator. None of the rigs at the show had either of those things.
I understand no microwave. I understand no generator. I'm not quite getting why no air conditioner. It certainly can get hot in some of these places.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of that has to do with you can't always count on getting the same level of electrical service in a campground, you know, from campground to campground. Like here you can always count it. You could probably at least get 30 amp, 120 volt service and probably 50 amp, you know, whatever. There it's 250 volts for one. And then we got maybe 16 amps in some places and less than that in some others. And so not ever really knowing, you know, especially when you go from country to country, and the ones we were in, it was all pretty similar. But if you went down to like southern Italy, for example, there might not be adequate power to run the air
right.
conditioner.
Right. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, in America, campgrounds are racing to catch up with 50-amp service and enough power for these modern RVs. It seems like maybe over in Europe it's not as much of a concern modernizing the campgrounds because the rigs aren't going in that direction. They're not starting to build 45-foot fifth wheels over there in Europe.
You couldn't get them into the campgrounds.
Right.
Yeah. So let's see. So there was the RVs themselves.
Yes. Well, another delightful difference was the garages. So remember, the rigs are all small over there, but they all had a garage under them. Even the tiniest Class C is going to have a garage that you can access from the outside for your bikes or for any of your gear. And we just can't think of a single small Class C over here that is like those European ones with the garages.
Yeah, think of it as like a mini toy hauler underneath the bed.
Yeah.
Right? It's pretty much
across the board.
Yeah, a standard feature in all the European RVs.
You two must have loved that feature. I mean, I could see you wanting something like that here in the States because you're so active and you're biking.
We do, and we're trying to convince someone to make one for us.
Yes.
We're not having any luck so far, but we're trying.
Here's to hoping there's lots of manufacturers listening right now. We want them to build us a compact C with a garage for our bikes.
I mean, it sounds like such a workable, doable idea, and I honestly think that would sell. I mean, you're not the only people traveling with athletic gear and equipment and bikes.
I can't imagine. I'm telling you, that Russ Garfin and his compact C's, I love those compact C's. So I'm sure he's going to be adding one of these onto one of those if you're whispering in his ear about that, because they are really, I really think that the compact C's at Winnebago are well designed. So this could only take it to the next level.
Well, we're going to keep whispering in this, believe me.
Now, I want to say, before we move on from this topic, I can't remember if you mentioned it to me when we were chatting or if I saw it in one of the YouTube videos, but you said the whole Wi-Fi scenario is significantly different over there.
Yeah, so we didn't see, like, in the RVs that they're, you know, putting in a lot of cell boosters and things like that.
Right.
Because generally, at least in the areas that we were, the Wi-Fi or there were Wi-Fi hotspots everywhere, and cell reception was really good.
Yeah.
So, but more than that is, you know, I didn't see people walking around walking into things because they were staring at their phones, you know, and I tend to see more of that over here. And over there, they seem to be a little bit better at unplugging, I would say.
I think so, too. When they were at the campground, they were disconnected from all that stuff, so they didn't care so much about checking their phones.
What is the secret sauce there? That is so fascinating to me.
Did you have any insight
into why that is?
Well, it's a lot of weekenders, so they go out for weekends, and then August is the big month. They get like a month off from work each year, and it's usually August. So maybe it's just that mindset that they're away from work now.
I don't know.
Europeans are better at vacation.
Right.
I think they always have been.
I know. I think that's documented, and I think Americans struggle, right, with the concept of time off. Like, we bring our work with us. It's, you know, well documented that we leave vacation days untaken, right, and left unused. And I think that that is not the culture in Europe. So they know how to take time off, and we could probably use a couple of lessons from them on that.
You know, I could use lessons. I think it says something that while we were on our European RV vacation, when it got to be like 7-8 o'clock at night and people came on to, I was actually working from the campgrounds in Europe.
Yep. Pesky day jobs. We had to keep connected for those.
Before we let you go, I do want to talk about the Dusseldorf show and just kind of maybe giving us some of your highlights from there. And, you know, you've been to your fair share of RV shows here in the U.S., including some of the biggest ones. We just saw you at the Hershey show last month. We've also seen you in Tampa, and I know you're at Pomona, which are pretty much the big three. So you've seen the biggest of the big here in America. Well, tell us a little more about that one.
Yeah, so those are all sort of dwarfed by the Dusseldorf show.
We should have measured the distance. So the Dusseldorf show is lots of big buildings all connected, and I'd say maybe like a mile to get around.
If you were to do a circuit of it, it would have been a mile, and it was all inside, which was nice.
Yes.
But it literally was a mile, I'd say, of just RV after RV.
It's incredibly overwhelming trying to see everything. And they kind of treat it as an event over there, too, because people come, RVers come, and they park. There's a camping area close by where thousands of them make this pilgrimage every year just so they can hang out at the show and check out the new rigs. And that was interesting to see, too. I know most of our shows have a little bit of camping, too. And I guess this is just a larger scale. Yeah. Of what we see over
here. A much larger scale. So if you took the big three shows here and combined them all together, that might be approaching the scale of the Dusseldorf show. And they make, like, events. Like, a lot of the booths for the different manufacturers would have, like, kitchens and cocktail hour and hors d'oeuvres. And
Right. So, we went to a couple parties after hours on the showgrounds of different manufacturers. That was incredible.
Yeah.
So
now that sounds fun. And we're saying here in America, Jeremy and I are always saying, look, you know, for all the complaining that people do about the RV industry right now, there's truly something for everyone out there. You know, there's so much diversity of offerings. Yeah. So did you feel like that was the case there at this show, too? Was there just a staggering variety, or were there a lot of manufacturers promoting the same kind of thing? You know,
it's interesting that you should bring that up. I kind of got a feeling after walking through the show for a while that a lot of it was kind of the same, because when you start, you know, remember we said before that pretty much everything over there has a garage, from the smallest travel trailer to the largest Class A that they have, which is still small. Everything's got a garage. And when you start with that basic requirement, you know, what can go over the garage? Well, pretty much only a bed can go over there. Otherwise, there's no room for anything else. And so a lot of them started to look the same to me after a while, you know, just maybe slightly bigger, slightly wider, slightly longer. Oh, this time we put the kitchen on this side or that. But
yeah, they're all designed very well and, you know, very modern and sleek looking inside. But we did go over there expecting, you know, we've always heard, oh, European RVs, they're so different and so amazing. Well, they were designed. They looked wonderful. But I didn't see as the big differences that I think I was built up to believe were going to happen. Yes, they were great. But most of the vans had the same floor plan, which was the dinette. Well, just like our Travato G. It had the Travato 59G floor plan.
Except maybe with the bed over in a garage area underneath.
Right.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, they were great and all, but there were different levels. There were some really huge ones.
Yeah, and there were some really swanky ones.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like we didn't think they were incredible. They were. I just think I went over there expecting something very different than the U.S. market. Turns out.
What an amazing experience that you two had. I mean, I must have been just a bucket list kind of a thing that you probably never even had on your bucket list, right?
Oh, it was. It was so cool. Incredible.
And I want to know, is the Fit RV going back to Europe anytime soon? Is there any chatter about visiting some other places over the pond? Oh, I think
Well, actually, funny you should mention that.
So James's birthday is coming up.
Don't tell people how old I'm going to be.
James is turning 50.
It's online.
In February, and we're going to Spain for his birthday, and we've invited our readers to come along to Spain. It's going to be a cycling vacation through Trek Travel. And so come to our website if you're a cyclist, and please join us to celebrate James's 50th
birthday. That is awesome. That's happy birthday in advance. And what you don't know is that you're going to be back on our podcast soon after that trip to talk about Spain.
Well, I have to say, we all have Trek bikes. Our entire family actually does. But I don't think that I actually don't think that we could hang with a Trek cycling event.
Well, I plan to do a little bit of playing hooky myself, since there's a spa at the hotel we're going to be at. So I'm not going to be that serious about the riding.
No, that
I'm just going to enjoy the time there.
I'm the typical masochistic cyclist, and if there's a if there's 10,000 feet of climbing in a day, I'll sign myself up for it and then complain the entire time.
Oh, yeah, because that's what I do. We've been on like the carriage roads at Acadia, which can be a little brutal in terms of you feeling like you've been going uphill the entire time.
Stephanie's such a great athlete. The only time she ever complains is biking. On biking.
So
trips
I'll
like
sit
that.
There and I'm just going, and I'll be like, we'll be going uphill and uphill, and I'll going, why is this fun? Why
she gets
is this?
She gets angry at me.
I say the same thing.
But then you do it all over again the next day.
Oh, and then we were just in Acadia, and here I was recommending to two people, oh, you've got to do the carriage roads.
It's so awful. You'll love it. Yeah.
But guys,
it hurts so much.
Tell our listeners where they can find you guys anywhere, you know, social media, online. Where should they go look for more great content from the Fit RV?
Sure. You know, I think the first place we post most everything is on our website, and that's just thefitrv.com.
Yep.
And we also have a pretty active YouTube channel.
Which so is that's the Fit RV.
The Fit RV. And then, you know, you can find us on
Facebook, Instagram, Facebook. Twitter.
Yep.
And I'm going to put in for our listeners, if you go over to the blog post for this podcast episode, I'm going to put in, embed some of these great YouTube videos that James and Steph did about RVing in Europe. So you can go over and you can see more about all of the things that they talked about on the show today.
Yeah, and I really want to emphasize, you really want to check out their YouTube videos. You guys are being humble. You have an awesome YouTube presence and have just done a lot of tremendous content on YouTube. So everybody needs to go check out your channel over there for sure.
All right, guys. It's not
Thank you.
Cannot be 2 years till you come back on the show, okay?
Definitely.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 164 of RVFTA, the Fit RV Camper Vans Through Europe. And we are not going to wait 2.5 years to get James and Steph from the Fit RV back on our podcast, are we, my dear?
Of course not. I don't even know if we're going to wait 2.5 years to go camper vanning through Europe. I mean...
Well, secretly, we didn't really confess this. Selfishly, we had them on the show because we want to go camper vanning through Europe. So we were totally like,
that's
teach
why we
us.
We have everyone on the show. We're right. Like, teach us something. That's why we're here. All right. Well, thank you so much to them for coming on and really, honestly, teaching us a lot about camper vanning in Europe. Like, I love getting that picture of what it's really like.
And honestly, it's a bit different than what I thought. I mean, I'm a little surprised by some of their takeaways.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And also a big thank you to our sponsors, Jayco. Head over to jayco.com to see a complete line of 2018 models.
And a big thank you to Thetford to check out their complete lineup of products. Visit them over at thetford.com. And we will see you in Dusseldorf at the RV show.
Witznau, Switzerland. See you there.
See you at the campground.